Hi, hello. We have a jam-packed episode of the Dunker Spot coming your way. But first, a quick disclaimer. Another episode of Dunk Tape dropped on the Yahoo NBA YouTube channel. Steve and I broke down Con Knipple, his impact to Charlotte's offense, particularly as a screener. So check out that video if you haven't already. We're going to have more in store for you moving. But as for today's episode, we celebrate greatness. Bam dropped 83. Shea passed Wilt. Nikola Jokic entered Wilt territory with his 10th game of at least 30 points, 20 rebounds, and 10 assists. Luka Doncic with 51, 10, and 9. We're just talking about great performances and what a place we're in the league right now. From there, we talk about the early returns of Team USA basketball. Blowout win against Senegal, blowout win against Puerto Rico. How are we analyzing things? Who stood out? What are we looking for moving forward? And then we have a guest. Gordon Hayward joins the show to talk about his basketball journey, what he's doing with Butler, the hit difficulties of being an all-around player and finding your role. We ask him about his thoughts of the Bam Adebayo performance and more. Please stay tuned. We hope you enjoy. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, happy Friday, sir. How are you?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Ready to talk some basketball because the matchups are heating up. The playoffs are right around the corner. We're getting some great basketball, and we're getting some great performances, Nikias. Some historic performances, Nikias.
We really are, Steve. Like, normally, especially on Fridays, it's like we're doing a team deep dive of some sort. And even with our usual Tuesday shows, we're normally starting teams, then flowing into players, and then going from there. This week has been so absurd, and I say that in complimentary fashion, that we kind of have to flip the script and start on the individual front. We are 2.5 days removed from Bam Adebayo dropping 83 points against the Washington Wizards. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander with nearly another 35 and 10 game against the Boston Celtics last night. He breaks Wilt's record for most consecutive regular season games with at least 20 points and counting. It's 127. That's absurd. And while the Shai game is happening, the Nuggets with a major comeback against the San Antonio Spurs without Victor Wembanyama, up more than 20 in that game, the Spurs were. Nikola Jokic, 31 points, 20 rebounds, 12 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks. And I was like, okay, well, that's kind of cool. And then you mosey on over. And it's Luka Doncic against the Chicago Bulls. It is 51, 10, and 9 with 3 steals and a block for Luka as the Lakers continue to roll. And it's just that you just kind of take the step back. I want to start with Bam, but overall, I just want to take the step back and say, this is awesome. We have so much talent in the league, and it sounds like cliche or whatever to say, but on any given night, you can see something ridiculous. On any given night, you can see something historic happen. I don't think anyone had 83 on their bingo cards as we circle to and ultimately start with Bam Adebayo.
Yeah.
But, like, this is why you watch food.
Yeah, I was going to say, before you get to Bam, like, this has been a tremendous week of basketball, and it's only getting better. Like, we've seen so many primetime matchups deliver during the course of this. We're seeing teams ramp up more game plans. We're seeing individual players elevate and rise to the occasion. We're seeing the competitive nature of it. Basketball's fun. And so if you enjoy basketball, this time of year becomes more fun for you. And so all of this is just a bonus. And so we're seeing the best of the best. Like you turn on TV, you see Donovan Mitchell. He's being guarded by someone. One second, the defender's in front of him. The next second, the ball's over his head. Like, these are great players delivering great performances at the right time of year. And I think it's just sometimes you have to take a step back and pause and appreciate, salute what they are doing and how good the basketball has been this season.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. So, Steve, I actually want to start with a question as we get to this Bam performance. 83 points, second highest scoring performance in NBA history. I want to ask, like, how did you absorb the Bam game? But, like, I would imagine, as many people were, and I was even anticipating heading into Tuesday night, oh, we got Spurs Celtics. I'm excited to see what that matchup looks like. How did you ultimately get to Heat Wizards? When did you kind of know something crazy was happening?
Well, I was into Spurs Celtics. I was really into, okay, what's Wimby doing? Where's Joe Mazzulla Wimby? How are they going to handle things? And then I looked at a box score of the Heat game at halftime, and I was like, Bam Adebayo did what now? I think I tweeted. I was like, what? What do you mean Bam Adebayo has 45 points in the first half? And then I was like, okay, so what's the Miami Heat franchise scoring record? And it's like 61. Okay, cool. So as he kept going, I got to the third quarter, and I was like, okay, oh, he's going to break the record. And then he gets on that dunk, and in my brain, I'm like, oh, this is over. Great night for Bam. The Heat win. Bam has broken the Heat franchise record. This is fantastic. And then everything changes. And this is where I think there's a shift between people who saw the game and people who looked at the box score, right? The fourth quarter was not an abomination of basketball. The fourth quarter was something completely different. And you started to see, oh, he's still in the game. And then as I was watching, I was like, oh, he has to stay in the game. And you know that's not like me. And I know that's not like you. It's very much, hey, this game is over. Get this guy out of here. We're good to go. But it's like, no, he's kind of got to stay in this game. And then once you looked at the camera, kept going over to Spo, it's like, oh, Spo's all in on this.
Yes.
Okay. And then it becomes the Wizards being like, hey, man, not you. And we have the mini game, right? It's like, okay, well, Bam's not making shots now. So we get Bam Adebayo off ball, pinned down. He draws a foul that way. Oh, no, you're in the bonus again. And now it's, okay, dude, we're double teaming you. There was a pick and roll. I will never forget. A pick and roll where Bam screens, right? I forget who had the ball in their hands for Miami. Bam screens. Bam's defender did not even look at the ball handler. He's like, I'm not leaving you. It was one of the easiest layups you can get. And I was like, oh, this game is different now. The Wizards are fully like, you're not going to do this. And Miami was falling on, yes, we are. And so you got Bam triple teamed up the court. He's trying to shoot a three players in front of him. He's trying to get, okay, well, I can't drive anymore. I got to get one up. And now, okay, I got to get a rebound. And now all his teammates are like, actually, Bam, yes, we are also in on this. That's different. And I think, like, in this life we have, you have one chance to do something a lot of times, right? When you have that one opportunity to do something, you're going to do everything to do it. You know, you can apply whatever analogy you want. Nick Eyes, if you had the chance to do something with our in the writing world, I'd push the heck out of it. Because, yeah, you got one chance to do this, man. It was a different thing. It's not a disgrace to basketball. It was a different competitive deal. And here's the thing. He had to make the plays. He had to make the free throws. He scored 62 points in three quarters. He put himself in that range. If he had come out and missed four shots and not gotten to the line to start the fourth quarter, guess what? We're not talking about any of this. Guess what? He doesn't sniff 83. Sorry.
And this is where I kind of want to take the pause, honestly. So, like, one, just to add some broader context to this basketball game, this was Bam Adebayo in the Miami Heat. No Tyler Hero, no Norman Powell, no Andrew Wiggins, no Khalil Ware. Bam was quite literally the only healthy true big in the rotation on that Tuesday night. So there is that. And Spo talked a little bit about this. I want to say either post-game of the 83-point game or pre-game of the Milwaukee game last night, which the Heat also won. And he was just like, no, I talked to Bam before the games. Like, we were missing guys. We need you to lock in. I don't think Spo anticipated this is going to turn into 62 through three quarters, 31 points in the first quarter, and ultimately 83. But it's just like, no, we kind of need this one. Like, we have had our games this season where we were playing a team that is below us in the standings, and we either lose or we come close to comfort. Like, this is Miami Heat heritage for someone that's watched this team and followed this team for a very long time. Those nights can happen. And this is where, like, I don't want to get too much on the soapbox. I'm very amped up about this. But, like, watch the games is such an easy thing to say, and it can be reductive at times. But, like, literally watch the basketball game. Once, I guess, to circle back to my initial question, like, how did you get to this game? So, Steve, I've been on this kick as of late towards, like, I like watching from behind at this point. Like, if a game starts at, you know, the tips at 7:38, I'll tune in at, like, 7:50 so I can fast forward through some of the free throws and commercial stuff like that. I'll catch up when I need to, especially if I'm doing other things around the house or whatever, right?
And you're so getting old.
I'm getting old. That's crazy. But, like, for me Tuesday night, there was a store run for me, and then I've also been on, like, WWE 2K26 to kind of turn the brain off a little bit, playing that, having fun with my GM mode, et cetera. And so I grocery shop, put stuff away. I finished like a couple of matches into my gym mode. It's like, all right, cool. Basketball's happening. I know I want to tune in to Spurs Celtics, so I'm kind of waiting on that to start or whatever. I check my phone as I get notifications for like certain news breakers, some team accounts, the NBA account, things like that. And it is just like, bam, bam, bam from the Heat account. And they show cases like some of the pull up threes. I'm just like, wait a minute, Bam's doing what now? And so I was like, okay, well, let me rewind to the start of Heat Wizards. I want to see what happens in this first quarter. He ultimately ends up with 31, as we know now. I was like, okay, let me watch this. I'm still waiting on Spurs Celtics. If he's cooking, then we'll see. If not, then okay, I'll tune to this game. Then I'll circle back to Heat Wizards tomorrow or whatever. Or I'll just watch the Bam possessions, however I want to do it. You know what ultimately froze me in my track as I was watching that first quarter, Steve? About a minute 50 left. Okay. It was a missed shot around 1:50 left in the first quarter where Jaime Hawkins is bringing the ball to the right side of the floor. They go wide action for Bam. And he takes a movement three that he probably got fouled on. And he misses. And I'm just like, okay, if Drew Smith is setting wide pins early in the clock for Bam to take threes off movement, if this is how high he's been in this first quarter, I was like, okay, no, actually, I'm staying here. I will watch Spurs Celtics either later tonight because getting to sleep sometimes is an issue, or I'll watch that tomorrow. I need to see how this first half ends now, if this is what they're doing to get Bam touches. And as I'm watching this first quarter, Steve.
No, wait, that possession was like, I ain't never, ever seen you act like this before. That was your moment for you?
Yes, because like, as I'm watching that first quarter, like it's already like, Bam feels the wing in transition, takes a catch and shoot three. Bam dribbles the ball up the floor after a defensive rebound. He's taking a pull up three. So it's like Bam shooting threes and having hot starts from three isn't necessarily new this season or new in this calendar year. Him coming off that wide, off the wide action from Drew Smith's screening for him. I was like, oh, nah. Bam is locked in if this is what they own right now. And now in this first quarter, Steve, I'm watching him cook. I'm also watching Alex Sarr cook as he's freshly back. I'm just like, oh, well, this is kind of a fun center battle. And I remember tapping in the Dunker Spot Discord. The first message I send is in all caps, boy, what the heck? In relation to the first quarter I just watched. And one of our dear dunkers, Jack, shout out to Jack, asked me like, hey guys, how you feel about Bam Adebayo? And I was like, this is insane shot making. And this is also some of the worst defense I've ever seen Bam play in a Heat uniform, but I am thoroughly sports entertained. And I was like, you know what? We're going to lock into this.
So Nekias coded, by the way. Unbelievable. Bam Adebayo has that first quarter. He's like, where's the defense at? Buddy, you were in for a historic day.
Listen, Alex Sarr was cooking. There was a possession like late first quarter. Bam's faced on the wing defensively, like a back cut right behind him. You can hear him on the audio of the broadcast saying, ah, stuff. We will say stuff is a family program. Ah, stuff, as he noticed the cut happened behind him for a layup. I was like, well, this is kind of crazy, but Bam is doing this on the other end, and the Heat are ultimately winning. So, like, I see it, but it's not that big of a deal in the grand scheme of things. But then it just turns into this. And it turns into that fourth quarter. And I understand people that tuned in late in that fourth quarter or as they're watching Spurs Celtics and you get the alert, wait, Bam has this much. Let's tap in. I can understand if your entry point to that game was Bam being fouled off the ball, Bam taking threes, the Wizards intentionally fouling other Heat players so Bam can't get a touch, the Heat intentionally fouling, Spo calling for a challenge clearly was going to lose that challenge. I can understand if that's your entry point, you're like, well, that's kind of crazy. What is this? This feels forced, yada, yada, yada. So I don't want to take that part from people.
There was a buildup, though. There was a buildup to those moments. It became something different. There was a build to, oh, we're on the way. We're getting closer. The Wizards had a challenge. They're like, actually, no, we're going to challenge that, buddy. Get out of here.
And that's ultimately where I circle back to, like, you should watch the full game to understand. I'm not saying you should enjoy 100% of what happened or have no criticism for like what the last 3 minutes of the game was. But my thing is, like, if that is the first thing you saw from the game, and then you look at the box score and you see the free throws and you see the 3-point attempts, and it's just like, oh, this was just a sham and a mockery and a sham mockery, you're doing yourself a disservice as a basketball fan. You're denigrating the overall Bam game. As we both mentioned, he had 62 through three quarters with the Heat missing like 70 points per game due to injury right now. Like, this is where watch the full thing. You understand how you got to that point. to where the Wizards are doing everything within their power to make sure Bam doesn't touch the ball, much less score. And the Heat are like, nah, we are making sure Bam gets this. We want this. And as I ultimately end up writing about in the piece, it was less of a breakdown of the game and more adding context to this is why the Heat were okay with letting Bam go for it. As you said a little bit earlier, Steve, I am very much, hey, this game is out of hand. I don't want any unnecessary injuries to key pieces. Sit down. Don't do this. Eric Spoelstra, hey, oh, you got this. Let's sit you down. We have won, or this game is over. The fact that Spo is like, no, you're going for this. The fact that Bam's teammates are like, no, you are going for this. One of the funniest transition like entry passes that sailed into row C happened in that fourth quarter, which Bam was very covered, and that ball sails 10 feet past them. It's just like, well, yeah, they're gunning to get him the basketball.
Well, that's another moment. Like, I guess to the point, and I don't want to belabor it too much, but there were so many moments where this could have just ended, right? That specific turnover where the young man was like, oh, Bam down there somewhere, yeet. And that ball went flying. I was like, oh, no. I guess we're not going there. But it was like, when you watched it, there was a build to Bam's getting closer and closer and closer. And then again, as that escalated, things changed. And it was just different. Like, it was just a once-in-a-lifetime experience for me. It's why I avoided the discourse about it. People want to yell and holler. That's fine. Live your life. Do what you do. I'm not an opinion changer. But for me, sitting there, that was probably one of the, like, you're never going to see anything like that again. You're not going to see a back and forth like that again. You're not going to see a mini battle like that again. And if things had gone bad in the first 6 minutes, we never get there. No one's yelling for three straight days. It was just something extremely unique, you know? And it's a salute to Bam Adebayo, who we just talked about last Friday, as a tremendous player on both ends of the floor, and now he's made history.
Yeah, like, he's the leader of this group, and it's like, no, you're going after this, man. And I want to circle back to something, Steve, as you mentioned, and we both kind of talked about at this point, the Wizards ramping things up and be like, nah, not you, big dog. I wanted to look at the double team rates per quarter from this basketball game with Second Spectrum Tracks. It's mostly like, when do you see a second defender? It's not always just pure double team on a post-up type beat. In the first quarter, Bam double teamed or saw a second defender on 15.4% of his possessions. In the second quarter, that was down to 11.1%. As reference, he had 43 in the first half. In the third quarter, that jumps up to 21.7%, which is a mark that would like lead the league if you extrapolate it, right? In the fourth quarter, Steve, that jumps to 47.8%. If you Washington would just said absolutely not to an egregious degree, and this is something that Bam alluded to both after that game and after being asked about it again after the Bucks game on Thursday night, where it's like, yeah, man, it's not my fault that I had this point total and the opposing team decided in the fourth quarter after I had like 70, now they want to start sending all of these doubles and triples and face guarding me off the ball, and I get the inbound this on me. Like, you're talking about me going for this. Look at what they're doing compared to like what they had did through the first three quarters when I had 62 already. Like, you're not about to ding me for that. You know what I mean? It was entertaining, like, listening to Bam talk about this, Spo starting the pregame presser today with, I apologize for absolutely nothing. And it's just three straight minutes of stole bars. Like, dear heavens. That brother
The contrast of Spo during that fourth quarter, as joyful and gleeful as could be, to actually, just so y'all know, I know what I did and I meant to do it. And you got to deal with it. All right, buddy?
It's like, hey, man, the Wizards tanking. I don't care what they do. Like, that's fine. Like, we drafted a guy at 14 that's doing stuff they want from a guy that drafted number one. I was like, my goodness, I ain't never, ever seen you like this before. And, like, the one thing I did appreciate of that whole thing from Spo, Steve, is when he got to, like, hey, man, if it's the end of the game and it's, like, 20-point game, somebody scores a basket, like, I don't care about that either. I was like, yes, you got a coach on the record. Get out of here with the unwritten rule nonsense. Like, play some defense. No, it don't matter. No, you know what I mean? Like, we got an ally in the fight. We did it, Steve.
No, you don't, Nikias. That's a lie. That's a bad part. It's not true. That's the unwritten rule. Reason. Don't get all excited over there. That's how you spark fights.
Oh, Lord. But okay. But last thing I wanted to hit on the Bam front, and this is stuff that I touched on in the piece that I wrote about the game. The overarching thing for me is like, yes, Bam was going to be allowed to indulge this one night because of everything that he's kind of sacrificed this year offensively. He's not screening as much on or off the ball. He's not getting the same volume of elbow touches. He's not getting the same volume of touches, period, as the Heat have shifted to this wide open offense. Everyone can drive, everyone can attack, et cetera. And so like, yeah, Bam gets a night to chase history or chase Kobe's mark of 81 points. Like, I think that's fine. But to that actual point, Steve.
Wait, hold on. Before you dump your stats to that point, we talked about Bam and the offensive struggles and him trying to find himself in a different role. This is not that he earned the right to chase that by scoring the basketball for three quarters.
Yeah.
That should be very clear. Like, it's he played his way into this moment. Don't ever get that twisted. Like, he's been he's sacrificed for the team forever, but he earned the right to have that fourth quarter by the first 36 minutes that he had.
No, I think that's fair. And like, as many people have opined at this point, like once you get into 60 point or 70 point games, for the most part, there's always going to be a moment to where, oh, well, I am chasing this part of the program. Like, I will never forget the end of the Devin Booker 70 point game. Or his teammates are like, no, we are making sure you get this. This is what we're getting into. Like, that's just part of it. And like, I don't think you have to your point, Steve, you have to be in position to chase it. Not that the chasing, you can criticize the chasing part if you want to, especially again, if you just tuned in to the last 3 or 4 minutes of the game, I understand that. But like, you have to score enough and play well enough. And to the Wizards double team point, like, you have to be defended in a way to where you can even have the opportunity to do so. Like, you hit 40 or 50 in a game, most times it's like, we double teaming you. You're not even hitting 60, 70, 80. You know what I mean? Like, it's not easy to be in position to do this.
Hey, half of the people that are ranting and raving about this isn't basketball. When a person who has not played in the game or doesn't play a lot of minutes come in the game, those are the same people yelling, shoot it, as soon as that person gets the ball. Which, by the way, you shouldn't do. It's awful. Terrible feeling. Shoot it! No, I just got in the game. I'm about to pass the ball. There's 2 minutes left. Yeah, I'm dribbling the clock. Leave me. But that's what y'all do. Yeah, come on.
Yeah, it just burned me up. But to the Bam point, to close things out, second highest scoring game in NBA history, of course, surpassed Kobe's 81, still behind Wilt's 100, which I just don't know if that's ever going to be broke. It's insane. Most NBA record for most free throws made and attempted in the game. Wilt went 28 of 32 in his 100-point game. Bam went 36 of 43, which is just an insane thing to say out loud. But again, watch how those free throws came about. There was nothing particularly ridiculous about it. They couldn't handle him. And once Alex Starr hit his minutes limit, it was Bilal Coulibaly, bless his heart, trying to defend Bam Adebayo. And it's just like, Bilal's a good defender. He's just not as big or as strong as Bam is. Like, that's not an easy job to have. But to the overarching thing, it was 90 touches in the game for Bam, easily a season high for him, flirting with a career high for him. It's only the sixth time all year that he eclipsed 70 touches in a game. He eclipsed 70 touches in the game 32 times last year. To again put into perspective how much he's kind of sacrificed on that front this past season. Dribble handoffs ran per 100 possessions. Last year, that was around 16. This year is at 2.5. He's not doing that as much. The elbow area touches about 18 per 100 possessions last year, down to 9.7 this year. Setting on ball screens, 39.5 per 100 possessions last year, 18.7 this year. Off ball screens, 17 to 12. Like, yeah, man, I think it's okay for him to have a fourth quarter where he gets to shoot the ball and gets to touch the ball when he has largely sacrificed that bit. So it's a salute to Bam. It was a fun time. It was fun to catch up on that game, watch it in real time. It was cool for him and the organization as a whole to just have that moment. Like, it was an electric experience for me.
Imagine the people that just bought a ticket to Heat Wizards. You know what? Let's go see some basketball. And then you end up in a moment where you just capture history. Like, cool things are allowed to be cool. Fun things are allowed to be fun. We spend so much time telling people, actually, why are we all actually everything? just take a deep inhale and let's enjoy as much as we can.
So there's your salute to Bam. Excited to actually got to talk about the game versus the discourse about the game. But we're going to take a quick break here. And when we return, it's time to turn our attention to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. 127 straight regular season games with at least 20 points. We talk about the ridiculousness of that. And I kind of want to get into what this 4-year run has been and how it compares historically. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back with this episode of the Dunker Spot. And Steve, what an electric game we got between the Boston Celtics and the Oklahoma City Thunder. Another clutch affair, more late game heroics from Shai Gilgeous-Alexander on both ends, as he got the late contest on the Peyton Pritchard three to close things out after knocking down a smooth pull-up jumper. You get the Chad offensive rebound to get free throws for the lead there as well. But ultimately, 35 points, 6 rebounds, 9 assists, 2 steals, 3 blocks for Shai in this game. And in that game, he passes Wilt Chamberlain 127 straight regular season games with at least 20 points. That has stood for so long. And like looking at the graphic that appeared while the game was happening, and it is Shai and Wilt tied at 126. Big gap. It's Wilt at 92. And it's just like, how do you get here? You have random off nights as an NBA. You have, I'm cooking in this game, but then I tweaked my ankle and I didn't come back. And like a record ends that game. To have that level of consistency, that level of like injury luck, to not have the streak broken, and to do so with the variety of defenses and defenders that Shai has seen during this stretch is patently absurd. And even watching him last night against Boston, where he's matchups and cycling through coverages, 11 of 13 inside the arc with the level of help that he was seeing on drives and some of the help being sent on some of the ISO attacks and some of the mid-range attacks was absurd to me in this game. So like, I kind of just want to start with a general salute to Shai. And like, how did you kind of absorb last night's game and the streak overall?
I mean, I think it's a massive salute to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and what he's done as a basketball player. It's one of those moments where there are certain names where if you're in the same realm as them, you've done something amazing. So I remember how I felt when Russell Westbrook hit the Oscar Robertson. I was like, I never thought I would see that in my lifetime. And even though I was never thinking about the streak that Wilt had, like every day, because it's something I didn't think would ever be broken. And then you see Shai Gilgeous-Alexander do it. And it's like, at a certain point, you got to tip your cap to Shai. And I haven't even been like the leader of the Shai train, but I have watched him grow over all these years. And this is a player that is unbelievably impactful every single night for the Oklahoma City Thunder offensively. There's just not much, especially the last 2 years, there's not much that defenses have really done to bother him. And he's just in such command of his offensive game. Whatever spot he wants to get to on the court, he's going to get to on the court. Whether it's in pick and roll, whether it's one-on-one, he's got these straight line drives to get all the way into the paint, right? He's got the ability to get to a pull-up, get to a step back, anything he wants in the mid-range, right? And this year, he's added the step back three. And I feel like we've talked about this, but the buildup from Shai as far as being able to have these counters, being able to be in command, and now doesn't actually matter who's guarding me. Doesn't actually matter what the help is shown. I'm also going to throw in playmaking. So if you would like to trap me in pick and roll, I'll pass the ball. It's fine. If you want to show early help, I'll pass the ball. That's fine. I'll also just drive right to the rim. We saw that in the Denver game as well, where it's like, okay, cool. You guys are, I got a guy on the wing. You're showing help from the top, but drive, finish. Now what? And so I think what we are not understanding or not giving him credit for is his ability to just continue to figure out ways to get to what he wants to get to, where he's just able to get to, like the step back three. What do you do with him? What do you do with him? You're already defending the drive. You're already defending the drive, Nikias, right? Like, okay, we got to keep this guy in front because he's gonna go straight line. We're good. Okay. Once he gets past a certain point, okay, we got to try and contest the pull-up or the step-back mid-range. That's cool. And now he's just like, actually, I am deciding on my own volition to take this step-back three, and I bopped it on you. Now you have another thing to think about. And what do you do with me? Shai Gilgeous-Alexander makes plays every single night, and to disrespect or ignore how good he is offensively is a massive mistake, in my opinion.
No, I am right there with you, Steve. And like, even extending it past the Boston game where he actually set the record. Like, this has been one heck of a week. He's just been incredible since he's been back from injury. Like, we talked on the Tuesday show about that Nuggets game where they just decided in that second half, nah, you're just getting bodies, buddy. Like, you please stop it. You are doing a little bit too much. And to your point, he could just kind of counter with, all right, well, forget the screen. I am just attacking in a straight line. I will meet you there. And I'm either getting to the midi, getting all the way to the rim, or I'm getting to the free throw line. Like, that's fine. And it was a similar bit in the Boston game. Like, okay, cool. Ugo, Baylor Shireman, Jaylen Brown, I appreciate what y'all are doing. I can cycle through all three of you and get to my spots. We go high pick and roll. I see you're big trying to creep up to the level. Let me just split this D-Wade style and get to my spot. What are you going to do? It's just insane. And so that thing, and that got me looking things up, Steve. And as I was thinking about, like, the help that Shai has seen in particular, both in the Boston game, the Denver game, what he's seen this year, what he's seen since he came back, I was like, let me take a look at this. So on the year, Steve, there have been 52 players to log at least 500 drives. He has seen a help defender on 76.6% of those drives, which is 22nd among those 52 players. Around average, I think that is a testament to how OKC wants to space. When they get into their guard-guard actions, they flatten the floor. So they do things to help ease pressure off of Shai, but defenses are still like, we need to send bodies because he's that good. So he ends up there. In the six games since he's been back, that drive help rate is up to 85.2%, which would pretty easily rank first among that 52 player group. That is a massive jump. And again, Denver showed a whole bunch of bodies. You've talked quite a bit with Boston as a whole with the way that they, sometimes it's an early load up, sometimes it's a late flood, but either way, Boston is sending bodies. You saw it there in that game. The New York Knicks are like, well, absolutely not. Like, we have a bunch of wing defenses to throw, but you are still seeing bodies as well. And it is just nuts. It's jumped to 85% on that front. When looking at double team rate, talked about that a little bit with the BAM conversation, but when is he seeing a second defender overall? Isolations, pick and rolls, whatever. On the year, 74 players have logged at least 3,000 touches. Shai seeing a second defender on 20.4% of those. That is third among that group. In the last six games, that has jumped to roughly 24%. That would easily be first on that list overall this year, Steve. Funny enough, it's Jaylen Brown at 20.9%. And then Devin Booker right behind him at 20.6%. So, yeah, the salute to Jaylen Brown, who also had a very good game against OKC last night and cycled through a whole bunch of defenders as well. So I want to give him a quick salute. But it's like, Shai is doing this. Shai doing this is incredible. Shai doing this as efficiently as he's done this is incredible. Shai doing this as efficiently as he's done this, despite what he is seeing coverage-wise and help-wise, is insane. And so that maybe then broaden the scope a little bit. Because when you zoom out with what the last 4 years have been for Shai, it's four straight seasons of him averaging at least 30 points, five assists, 60% true shooting or better. If that pace holds up for him, it's him and Michael Jordan as the guys that have done that for four seasons. And coincidentally, MJ, bro. And so it's him and MJ in that regard, which is insane in and of itself. And so that got me thinking, like, what are some 4 year peaks or just 4 year stretches for other Hall of Fame or future Hall of Fame two guards looking like? And I filter for like the age 24 through 27 seasons, because that's where Shai is right now. He turns 28 in July, I want to say. And so I wanted to see, like, okay, him versus MJ, him versus Kobe, him versus Dwayne Wade, him versus James Harden. Like, that was kind of the group that I went with there. And I was like, okay, the eras are different. Like, the league context is going to be different. Like, how can I flatten? Went with their numbers per 75 possessions to kind of flatten things out on that front. And then in terms of their efficiency, I wanted the true shooting accounts for twos, threes, and free throws. But I also wanted the relative true shooting so I could see how efficient they were compared to the league during those years as well. So you can get a broader picture of this level of sustained excellence, right? And so Shai right now, to quickly go through it. Shai is at 32.9 points per 75 possessions on 64 true shooting. That scoring mark is number one on the list. Higher than MJ, higher than Luka, who I think is second on the list overall. Didn't want to include him in the guard conversation, but that's a whole other thing. But Luka's obviously all-time great, will be a Hall of Famer if he retires today. But it's 32.9 points on 64 true shooting, 5 boards, 6 assists, 2 steals a game. Shea is above about 6 percentage points above league average in terms of his efficiency, which is absurd. Michael Jordan, 32-6-6, 61 true shooting. He's about 7 points above league average over his 4-year stand, which is absurd. Kobe Bryant, from 03 to 06, that last year was the year that he dropped 81, averaged over 35 points per game, etc. About 29 points per 75 possessions, 55.6 true shooting, which sounds low, but over 3 points above league average. And when you consider what his team context was, where the league was defensively, where 3-point shooting was, et cetera, him being above league average to that degree with the shots that he was taking, as difficult as they were, is insane. 29-6-5 for Kobe, 29-5-7 for Dwayne Wade, 57 true shooting for him, also above 3 percentage points higher than league average. James Harden, as him and the Houston Rockets during that time, 2014-2017, they were kind of on the cutting edge of efficiency ball. Like, we want to take threes, we want to get to the rim, we want to get to the free throw line. 27-6-8 for James Harden, 61 true shooting, nearly 7 points above league average in terms of his efficiency. Like, Shea is just there. Like, it's a higher bar than Kobe and Wade. He's right there with MJ and Harden in terms of how much more efficient he was than everyone else. The scoring is higher than everyone else. I think Harden has the playmaking bump, of course. But it's like, this is the air that Shea Gilgeous-Alexander is in right now. And as you look at that group, and particularly that timeline, like, these are all champions, MVPs, or both. We talk about just the group of players that he's with. He's fresh off an MVP and a championship and a finals MVP. He's probably going to win MVP again if he doesn't get hurt and he qualifies. The Thunder should be the favorites in the West. It's between them and San Antonio with how well they play. He can add to the resume. Like, I think we should appreciate what Shea is doing right now and sometimes just kind of take the step back and, like, this isn't just him fighting for best player in the league with Nikola Jokic and others. He is an all-time shooting guard already. And I just think that needs to be said. Like, I don't think it's a hot take, but, like, nobody really does this. And he's been able to do this in OKC. It has been a joy to watch. It's been a privilege to watch and analyze, honestly. He's insane. Okay. He's insane.
All right.
There we go.
You dropping that one at the barbershop?
I might just have to. And if they ask me what true shooting is, I have to go to a different barbershop. That's okay. But no, he's just insane in all seriousness. So I just want to salute Shea for the record and what he's doing and the historical era that he's placed himself in with his 4-year stretch. That's ultimately what I want to get to. Now, did you have anything else you want to add on the Shea front before we move? Don't want to be rude because I got yappy there.
No, I'm good.
A couple quick notes I wanted to hit, and we're going to move to Team USA as they played their first two qualifying games here. Again, 30-20-10 for Jokic. That was the 10th of his career. Over the last 50 years, the rest of the league combined has 6. That is not what that's supposed to look like. Him and Wilt Chamberlain, the only guys with double-digit 30-20-10 games. So salute to him. And Luka Doncic, I just felt bad for Matas Buzelis in that second quarter and onward, watching what Luka was able to put together in that game. And I also just kind of laugh that, like, every team in the league runs a variation of Chicago action or Zoom action, whatever you call it. Anytime a team runs Chicago against Chicago, I kind of chuckle because I'm just a corny individual. But Luka was just flat out styling on the Bulls when he was coming off of these handoffs and tossing in these passes. And just in general, the transition, just the passes from Luka to Rui Hachimura in particular were insane. Like, early in the first quarter, like, he loses the ball on the gather, gets it back with one hand, and fires a dart right into the shooting pocket to Rui, which was absurd. And then you have the Chicago rep in the third quarter where he comes off. And, like, he gets 2 on the ball. It's a one-hand jump pass where he's, like, trying to freeze Jalen Smith as he's staring at DeAndre Ayton as he fires a no-look to Rui Hachimura in the opposite corner, right into the shooting pocket again for a 3. And it's just, like, he's one of the best offensive players we have ever seen. The Lakers are rolling right now. 51-10-9, nothing to sneeze at. I just wanted to salute as well, and those plays were incredible. Now, to the Team USA portion, Steve. I was excited to see what this was going to look like. They're playing in qualifying games. They have already qualified for the World Cup, so in a literal sense, they didn't need this. And so for me, I want to start this with a question for you, Steve. When it comes to the Team USA exhibitions that we've seen so far, just kind of heading in and understanding that they have already qualified, so they aren't technically playing for anything outside of establishing a rhythm. Does that shift your analysis at all for like what you're looking for, or how harshly or how strongly you're grading things when kind of watching these games?
No, they all get to play together. Great, talented players get to play together, and there's a lot of people making their debuts when it comes to the senior squad. So while you might, may not be something that you're playing for a whole lot. And I think you saw that by the effort they displayed. Obviously, for a high bulk of the roster having played unrivaled, they were ready to continue to keep playing basketball, so it made a lot of sense. But that team coming together that quick and playing the level of defense with that kind of activity over two games was very impressive. Like, they were active, pressuring the ball, full court, hedging, switching, rotating from the wing if there was any sort of opening. They just made it tough in two straight games. And so you have to just appreciate how quickly they bought into each other, how important that is. And because, I mean, you're trying to continue to be a mainstay on Team USA. It's not easy to get there with how many great women's basketball players there are. So you're trying to prove yourself on a different stage and show that, hey, I can compete, I can defend, I can do different things. I think when you look at what Team USA did, being able to have so much versatility in different lineups and, you know, sometimes going five in, five out, and sometimes not, I was really, really impressed by, you know, especially the bigs. The bigs are versatile. And so if you're talking about Monique Billings, you're talking about Kiki Iriofen, you're talking about Angel Reese, Derica Hamby, they can have that activity. They can hedge hard. They can mix in switches, and you can feel comfortable in certain matchups. And then you got the guard play, right? I mean, so Kalia Copper is going to be aggressive on both ends. Caitlin Clark was passing the absolute mess out of the ball in both of these first two games. And Caitlin Clark's ability on a fast break to just manipulate, you could see that when she's bringing it up, she's looking to see, are you running? Are you there? Are you close? Bang, fire exactly where it needs to be on time, on target. And so to see Caitlin Clark come back and have an impact was fantastic. Chelsea Gray being able to mix in with different lineups. Jackie Young, like, I think, you know, Paige being in there, Kelsey Plum. The way that they're able to have, okay, we have three guard lineups. We have two bigs out here. Offensively, we're going to be able to move and kind of have two sides of action going on, but we can kind of throw Chelsea Gray or Ryan Howard out here as quote unquote the four and give you a different look. We can throw the ball into the post. We can go drive and kick. It's been really fun to just kind of watch them piece things together. And I think when you're a team like this, it's not like a ton of time that you have together. So for me, when you're talking about evaluating, hey, what's the buy-in like? What's the philosophy like? What's the driving kick like? What's the defense looking like? And so it's not as much as like grading harshly. It's more so, okay, how's this building? How's this coming together? What are you doing with the next portion of it?
I think that makes sense. I think to answer my own question, as you know, Steve, for knowing me for years at this point, like, I am very process peeled. It is more like, what are you doing? How are you doing it? More than like, did the shot go in or did it not? Defensively, what are you trying to do? Did you execute the coverage more so than like, did the opponent knock down the shot or not? And so that was kind of heightened for me, considering, again, they have already qualified. So it's not like a fight for your life type situation, at least in a literal, at least as relates to the actual competition. Like, as you mentioned, there are plenty of debuts. So it's like, hey, I need to play well so I can actually make the World Cup roster later this year and put myself in contention to make the Olympic roster in 2028. So there's that inherent pressure. But competition-wise, like, okay, well, they are going to be fine. And then you look at the overall talent level, it's like, okay, I am expecting Team USA to win these games. So it's less like, what is the deficit, which 110 to 46 against Senegal, then 91-48 against Puerto Rico. Like, I think you take those wins, you'll take that differential. But it's like, okay, what are y'all trying to get to offensively? What are y'all trying to get to defensively? And particularly with the offense, like, when you see different looks, how quickly do you diagnose things? And what are you trying to do to beat what you're looking at? And so that's where it's kind of fun in the Senegal game. They're tossing in this full court pressure. And it's like, okay, how is Team USA going to handle full court pressure? They doled out their own, to your point. Shout out Kalia Copper. I think she really set the tone defensively among the starting group, particularly with her full court pressure. Kelsey Plum carried that over in the second unit as well. But offensively, it's like, okay, how are you dealing with full court pressure? Is this going to be, we're just dribbling through this and then getting to our offense? Are we going to have screens at half court to kind of relieve things? Are we just flashing someone to half court to advance it? Like, what is your process there? And then in the half court, what are you trying to get into? I jotted down in my notes, and I think I tweeted about it as well. Just looking at some of the early half court off a Senegal game, and it popped in the Puerto Rico game as well. It's like, huh, they really do love this, like, Iverson screen into empty side pick and roll setup. Like, this is a lot of that. And I think that's fine when you have the playmakers and ultimately the screeners and play finishers that they have on this roster. And this is with, you know, we don't have Breanna Stewart, at least not yet, with either of those two. And so for Monique Billings to kind of slide in, like, oh, no, I got this. Or Kiki or Angels, like, oh, no, I got this. I can screen. I can get out of here. I can finish, or I can make another play if necessary. Like, it was cool to kind of see that progress. As I was watching some of these pick and roll setups offensively, one thing I added in my notes was I like the fact that they have these flare screens or these pin-ins built in on the weak side. Like, they're very intentional about, we got a big kind of roaming the short corner area around, you know, inside the wing. We're prepared to set something to occupy your help. And then if we are going side to side, turn right into a pick and roll with an empty side or hit the big and kind of flow into cut off of that. We can just kind of play out of that. So I like that conceptually. I felt like some of like the spacing around that, or the spacing from the big after setting that screen, like, okay, where are you getting to next? If the action doesn't directly involve you, like, piecing that together was something that I was kind of keeping track of, see what that part looks like. You get to the Puerto Rico game and like they're throwing out zone against Team USA. It's like, okay, I like these middle flashes. How quickly are we getting to some of these shots? Like, how much are we moving the ball here? Like, those are things that I was kind of tracking. So like it was a fun time for me overall, just kind of piecing through
I'll tell you, there's a process to the process. And so I'm going to send you down at a different level. Yeah, there's timing issues sometimes on those flares, but it's a read. You got to react. And so at one point, if you have possession where it doesn't come together, you got to recognize, okay, they're waiting to see what happens on the first side of the floor before they can get to the second side action. And now you're trying to read, what is the guard doing? So now I know, what is my next step? Because there's another big out here most of the time. So you're trying to kind of read a lot of different things. Basketball, it's an art. It takes timing. And so especially with a team that hasn't had a ton of practice time together, those are kind of the lumps you're going to have to take. But if you have the mindset to try and execute those, I'm in the corner, I'm going to give myself up to set a flare. I'm going to flash to the top and we're going to get to the second side. That's how you build good habits as a basketball team. So there's always a process to the process. Never forget that, folks.
Wise words from Steve Jones Jr. I'm right there with you. I will say, to the individual point, I'm glad you started with Caitlin Clark, who's also making her debut. The passing was so fun, as you already mentioned. And like, it popped in all of these contexts. Like, she checks in for the first time and it is immediate empty side pick and roll with her and Monique Billings. Pocket pass on time, on target with the appropriate amount of zip. It's a layup. It's like, oh, okay. And like watching those two in particular build chemistry early on, like it was pick and roll stuff. It was transition stuff. It was some like defense is already tilted. Ball gets to Caitlin on the second side. She's attacking. Here's a lay down for her. It was cool to watch that develop in real time. And the chemistry between Caitlin and Ryan Howard, who 21 points in the game, I think 6 of 9 from three in that contest. Ryan just seems primed for this context, to where she can be a three and can take on some guard assignments defensively. And that is just a lot of length to deal with. Ryan coming off of her first all defense selection this past season. So you have that. And then on the other end, you just don't know where she's going to be. You have to locate her quickly in transition or you're in trouble. They may just run off ball action for her in the half court, or she's just kind of roaming around the perimeter. If there's a drive, she's staying in her driver's line of sight. She's finding opening, and like Caitlin in particular did a really good job of finding her. And so like, and I think with the second unit in general, Steve, like the immediate pace and pressure pickup from that group compared to the starters popped on film in both of those games. Like they got out and ran whenever we saw variations of that group. When you had Caitlin plus Paige plus Ryan, you know, Monique and Kiki sometimes it was just Kiki. You slot Ryan down to the four, you go three guards, as you mentioned, with some of the lineup versatility. But like, the juice provided with Caitlin and Paige to that effect, we're getting up and down the floor. I think it bodes super well moving forward. So like, I enjoyed that portion of the program.
No, I mean, I think I like the lineup combination is probably the fun thing as far as just seeing who's playing with who, when are we playing with who. And so you talk about, hey, the mood changes in the second with the second unit. It depends on who's starting, right? The first unit in the first game set the tone defensively. Second unit came in and said, yep, we're going to go ahead and keep some time of that and also score. And then you play mm-hmm. the Puerto Rico game. It's like, okay, well, we can set the tone defensively, but also we could score and extend this lead. And now it's Caitlin Clark with Angel Reese and De'Ara Kahambi and Kalia Copper and Jackie Young. So you have to deal with mm-hmm. that as well. So just kind of having this wave and this flow, I think was fantastic for Team USA.
Yeah, I think it was a good time. Can I ask you one defense question before we take our break? Because as you mentioned a little bit earlier, they were mixing in a lot of things. A lot of hedges. We did get some general at the level stuff. We got some switching, some late switching. The full court pressure was there. I don't think we saw much or any zone. I don't know if they need it right now. What would you say was their best coverage through the first two games?
Their best coverage was their effort, if I'm being completely honest.
Okay.
It takes a lot to be able to defend at that high of a level. And it's not easy to be able to mix coverages at a different time. And that impressed mm-hmm. me more than one specific coverage. And so being able to have De'Ara Kahambi or Angel Reese or Monique Billings have that high level of activity and also know, okay, I can jump out and hedge. I can switch this and we can be fine. Mm-hmm. And the nuance that they had as a team to understand, okay, this one's a two on the ball. We need to rotate. This one is, if you watch, there are some wing rotations from the weak side where like, actually, I got you. I'll take it. That impresses me more than just being able to do one specific thing. I think it's great to be able to nail one defense. When you are able to kind of go in your back pocket and say, we can full court pressure, we can switch with our big lineup. We can switch with our smaller lineup. We can kind of make it so that we're denying the ball. We can have this level of activity. That's more impressive to me than one specific thing. And so that's where I walk away from the Team USA defense saying, ooh, they are cooking because they have done it consistently, possession after possession. Does it mean they're going to stop every time? No. But that activity jumps off the screen if you watch it.
Yeah. All right. I think that's fair. We'll take the break here. And when we return, we have a guest. Gordon Hayward joins the show, talk about a little bit of everything in the basketball world and Colgate. So please stay tuned. And we are back with this episode of the Dunker Spot with a special guest joining us. We have Gordon Hayward in the house, former All-Star Gordon. Thank you for joining us. How are you?
I'm good, guys. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Now, before we get into the basketball of it all, because I do have quite a few basketball questions for you. I know Steve does as well. A lot of Colgate in the background for you. So I want to ask, what is up with Colgate? What work are you doing with Colgate?
Yeah, so I'm here in New York City for the Big East Tournament. I'm partnering with Colgate Total. They are the exclusive oral sponsor of the Big East Tournament. And it's been my second year here. It's been great to partner with them. I think it's actually a legitimate partnership because I've got five kids at home. We got a big crew. And it's a nightly battle and morning battle to get everyone to, brush their teeth and have some good oral hygiene. And so, Colgate Total does a good job. I try to tell these guys, you don't want to be like your dad and have cavities and root canals. We got to do some preventative work and just using their toothbrush, using their toothpaste to just brush your teeth, daily routine. It's really easy. For some reason, they're not getting that piece. Sometimes I guess you got to go through it yourself to get it. But I'm trying, man. Colgate Total does a great job, like I said. So I'm here with them. Get a chance to watch my Butler squad. We took an L last night. But the Big East Tournament is one of the best college tournaments in the country. It's in the Garden, and so it's a good time here.
Got you. I appreciate that. Steve, I know you can appreciate the difficulties of getting the toothbrush to get the going.
Yeah, I got four. They're staggered out. Yeah. But I was about to say, you got to be pretty locked in with that routine.
Well, yeah, you know the deal.
Okay. Before I get to the NBA side, I'm glad you mentioned Butler because I wanted to ask you about you being the executive basketball advisor, something that was announced late last year. Just how did that come about and how much are you enjoying the role so far?
Yeah. So, since I retired, there's been actually a lot of changes at Butler. When I was playing, we were in the Horizon League. We moved all the way up to the Big East. Now they've been in the Big East for a while. But they actually, we got a new AD, Grant Leindecker, who's done a great job at Butler. And I actually played with Grant. He was a teammate of mine. And so, Grant was kind of like, we'd love to have you come aboard and, give us some of your insights, your expertise, just, advise us and be around. So I've been around for the players, been available for the players, the coaches, you know, been able to talk to the guys, and it's been fun. I think having Butler, I live actually in Charlotte, North Carolina, but having Butler, you know, on national TV all the time, I'm able to see him, I'm able to travel to some games. It's been a cool way to stay around the program and still be around a game of basketball.
What's it like giving back, especially in today's kind of era of basketball, being able to kind of impart some knowledge in the younger players?
Yeah, I would say for one, it feels so weird because it doesn't feel like it was that long ago that I was playing. guys look at me like I'm ancient, you know, and I've got this dad vibe now, which is, it is what it is. But it doesn't, yeah, it certainly doesn't feel like I'm as old as I am. It's been good. Now, I think there's been some challenges in this basketball landscape in college where it's really hard to get guys to buy into playing for what's on the front of your chest, because that changes from year to year. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting. It's definitely a challenge, I think, especially at a school like Butler for us, where, you know, we got to win with our culture and our toughness and our, you know, the way we play the game. And, you know, we have to find the right pieces for our system. And so that's what I'm going to try to help us do. You know, we didn't have the year we wanted to this year. We had some injuries, some both of our point guards going down. But, you know, that's something that we're going to have to, you know, do at Butler.
Got you. I guess quickly, did not know you were in Charlotte. You might be around the corner from me. I got to hit you up after the show. Yeah. But to the basketball side, like, I asked something that I always like to ask players, former players, coaches, is how they're able to engage with the basketball when they aren't playing. And so my question for you is, are you able to casually enjoy basketball, or are you still kind of in the player mold of, I need to break this down, I'm studying tendencies? How easy or hard is it to kind of separate from that?
Well, I guess I think you could ask my wife that question, and she would tell you that it's really annoying watching basketball with me, because I'm pausing the game and rewinding it. And I'm like, look at this. You see what happened here? Like, he should have done da 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 da. And so I think it is hard to just, when we go out to, you know, we go out to eat and the game's on, I don't have control of the remote, so I can't do it then. But I think once you're in it for so long, it's hard to just be a casual fan, because there's just different things that you see, and, you know, you just want to talk hoops, you want to talk ball. And so I'm not there yet. I probably will get there eventually, but I'm not there yet where I'm just like watching the game casually.
Got you. I guess to broaden the scope then, who are some of your favorite teams to watch? I just got to shift to the NBA side of things.
Yeah. You know what? I am loving watching the Spurs play. I think first and foremost, you know, Wembanyama is out of this world. He is a true definition of an alien out there on the court. There are so many things, like when you watch him play, it seems like every game there's something that he does and you're like, I've never seen that before. That was incredible. Like, his first game of the year this year, he was doing things where it's like seriously a creative player on NBA Street. Like, it was, he's shooting threes for a 7'4" guy to like tween cross behind step back three. You're like what? I mean, it's over for the league, right? Like, you're sitting there watching it. But one thing that I really appreciate about watching the Spurs is, like, he seems to, and I'm not like watching super closely, but from the outside looking in, it seems like he says he's about the right things. You know, he's about his teammates, that they play the right way. He's not super forcing stuff. And they got some other guys around him now. They're going to be a tough out. Like, Stephen Castle is really, really good. You know, they got Vassell. They got, everyone forgets about De'Aaron Fox. They got De'Aaron Fox there. Like, they're a legit contender. And also, at the same time, being a really fun team to watch.
That was going to be my next question. Do you feel like they are ready to contend right now? This is pretty young into their current iteration of the team right now.
Absolutely. I think they're ready to contend. I mean, I think that's the one question about Victor that certainly everybody has. And I think it's just fair, just because of how tall he is. It's like, is he going to be able to stay healthy and stuff? I think he's in his prime, like, right now. I mean, he is certainly, you can make a case for him being the MVP with how he plays. That the experience piece, I think, is the only thing that you can question, right? So when they get in the playoffs, it's a different game. And can he play with the physicality and kind of how the game is completely different in the playoffs? Like, I don't know. We don't know that, right? But what I do know is that they blasted the Thunder multiple times, right? Like, they seem to be able to beat everybody in the league. So I would certainly say they're a contender. They're one of the two or three teams in the West that can come out.
Got you. Shifting to the Eastern Conference really quickly. Naturally, you have the relationship with Brad Stevens. You played in Boston. The Celtics, as of recording, think second in the Eastern Conference. They have the best point differential in the Eastern Conference. How surprised, if at all, are you by what they've been able to do this year as they're just now getting Jason Tatum back into the fold?
Very surprised. And actually, like, Joe Mazzulla is a good friend of mine, and I sent him a text at the beginning of the season, like, I think they started out like 0-3 or something. And I texted him like, hey, man, like, it's going to be a tough year. Like, I'm here for you, buddy. Like, something like that. And here they are, like, second in the East. They're balling. They've done a tremendous job. I think it's credit to Joe, credit to the other guys, Peyton Pritchard, JB stepping up and playing at an MVP level. Like, their role players stepping up, like Derek White is a winner. They're one of the two or three teams, especially with JT coming back, where it's like, I can see them winning the East, right? Like, I can see them making a run.
Yeah, I guess on that end, how have you felt about the Jason Tatum early returns? He's only three games in right now, but what have you kind of seen from him so far?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's incredible. I think it's a testament to his work ethic. I think it's a testament to the staff. I think it's a testament to their PTs, the doctors that have been around him. For him to come back so soon, you know, that's incredible. And then to be thrown into the fire, like, I think people don't understand when you're hurt to get thrown into an NBA game. It's, you know, that's why generally you need like an off season to get yourself right, get yourself ready. But I think it's been great for him. He hasn't been as efficient. I haven't seen all the games, but I've seen the box scores. He hasn't been as efficient as like he can be and will be. But I think it's been really important for both him individually and for the Celtics, for him to be able to get these attempts up, kind of knock off some of the rust and get back into the groove of things. So I think it's great for their team, for him. He's got however many games left to kind of get right, and then they can make a run.
Got you. I guess circling to you in particular as a player, as you were a very talented all-around player, and something that I've always been kind of curious about on that front is finding your rhythm when you can do a little bit of everything, or when you're asked with doing a little bit of everything. Is there like a hidden, maybe not difficulty, but is it underrated how hard it is to be asked to fill different roles?
Yeah, I think that's the thing that a lot of people don't understand, is it's one thing to just play a role your whole career and you kind of know how to do it and you slot right in and you can focus on that. For me, that's where the injury kind of really changed the arc of my career, because I go into Boston and I have the best year of my career. I'm an all-star, I'm a scorer. And I got signed in Boston to do a lot of that. And, when I get injured, our team on paper, the year coming back was incredible. I mean, you go look at that roster and we probably had six or seven guys that have had 40-point nights in the NBA. And so I'm trying to prove myself as the scorer that I was. But you have a young Jason Tatum, a young Jaylen Brown, Kyrie had it gotten injured the year before too. He's trying to come back and prove himself. You know, Marcus Smart, Terry Rozier's on the team, like all these guys. And it's hard to adjust to a new role. And it's hard to kind of take a step back. That's one thing I wish I would have done was just play the role of, you know, just do whatever the team needs me to do. And I felt like I did that a lot. But I felt like I probably could have done a better job of that. And so that's ultimately I move on and go to Charlotte, because I wanted to maximize myself and my role, and felt like prove to myself that I could go back and be the scorer that I was. And I felt like I did it well. My time in Charlotte also was cut short due to injuries. I had some of the best scoring nights of my career in Charlotte. Mm-hmm. And so I felt like I got back to that player, that player and that ultimately gave me some peace.
Who do you think you've learned the most from among the coaches that you played for?
Oh, wow. That's a loaded question there. I think I've learned a lot from everybody. I think to be honest with you, my years in Utah with Quinn Snyder were were probably like the most impactful for me as a player, and, you know, taught a bunch of principles that I still firmly believe in today, and took us to the second round where we run into the, you know, the buzzsaw of Golden State with Kevin Durant. But we beat, you know, the Lob City Clippers. And so for us to kind of grow up together there and have him leading the way, I mean, he was a really important coach for me as an NBA player.
Can I ask a question while we have Gordon Hayward here? Because I was in the video room in Memphis when Quinn Snyder was in Utah with y'all.
Okay.
How long did it take you to get his terminology for play calls? See?
Yeah, we had a lot going on there. Now, I will tell you that he was quizzing us. We would get fly into on a road trip, and we'd have 45 to an hour minute, you know, long film sessions, and he would write stuff on the board, and he'd be quizzing us like, what are the pillars? What is this? What is that? And, you know, so it took us a full year. Like I said, we lost a lot of games. But once you get his terminology down, it makes sense, man. He's a super smart coach. And, but yeah, you're right. He's got a lot going on.
Man, Nikias, when I tell you the first time I got the scouting report on what the Jazz play calls were, because usually you can kind of put two and two together with what play calls are, right? I'm like, why is bull this action? Why is that not horns? Like, why is this? What is clock? Like, what are you saying?
he did. He specifically wanted to kind of go against the grain on that stuff, because everyone used the same thing, right? Like, we're running horns, we're running cross four, cross five. Like, everyone's the same type of play calls, and he's like, we're not doing that. We're going to be a little different. So it seems like you figured it out, though. Like, you didn't have a problem with it. You figured out that bull was horns.
I love that for you, Steve. I wanted to go a little rapid fire here with you, Gordon, to kind of close things out. A lot of talk around Bam Adebayo these days, as he is fresh off an 83-point game. A lot of conversation around how it happened. Where do you land on the Bam game?
Yeah, I feel like I feel bad even in talking about it, but I don't think it's a good look for the league. I just think that it's because, and look, like, this is like no disrespect to Bam. Bam is, I think, one of the best two-way centers that we have in the game. Certainly two-way American centers that we have in the game. Like, he's an incredible player. I just think he's not a scorer. And so for him to shoot 43 free throws when he has had maybe five or six games all year over 10 free throws, he's not even like a volume free throw guy. For him to shoot 22 threes, for him to, I have heard that they were intentionally fouling, and he was, I mean, the game kind of turned into like not a basketball game. Like, that's where it feels like very like flukish. It feels like if it was Luka or KD or, you know, like a bona fide scorer, you know, it feels a little different, right? But the fact that it's Bam, you know, it just doesn't. And because, you know, Kobe was such an idol to all of us as players, and it was like, Kobe's a scorer, man. He's one of the greatest to ever do it. And so for Bam to pass him, you know, it just feels weird.
Feels weird. Understood. We'll take that in the interest of time.
But like, that's no disrespect on Bam, right? Like, Bam, what is Bam going to do? Like, I don't think it's his fault. You know what I mean? Like, he's just out there going to get buckets. They're telling him to get buckets. He's going to do it.
Yeah, you get 62 through three quarters. It makes sense that, hey, let's go ahead and go for this real quick. On the non-basketball side, how often do you play tennis now?
Oh, man, that's, you did some research, huh? I got a chance to play. So Francis Tiafo, I don't know if you, go to this, since you're in Charlotte, did you go to the event that they had?
I did not.
They do a really cool event where they bring in some pros, and Francis has come, I think, the last 2 years, and he's really good with like being a showman as well as being an unreal tennis player, obviously. So I don't play tennis as much. I picked up golf, actually. So I've been trying my hand at golf. Gerald Henderson, I don't know if you remember him. He's a member at Carmel, where I'm a member at. And so he's a really, really good golfer. So I'm trying to get like Gerald.
There we go. Last question I have for you, as I think you are still a gamer, or at least I would hope so. What games are you playing, or what are you excited about that's coming out?
So, yeah, I wish I could game as way more than I do now. We've got five kids, and so I get some flack for gaming. My kids are not of age yet where they I can game with them. So I've been playing. I play a lot of chess. It seems like I play a lot of strategy games these days. I've been playing some team fight tactics on the PC. I will tell you this. Yeah. My daughter introduced me to Block Blast, which I know it's just a mobile game, but I'm like addicted to
Block. Locked in.
My 9 year old is talking trash to me about it. And so I got to beat her record.
Oh, that is fantastic. Well, Gordon, thank you again for joining us. Had a blast in this conversation. Again, I'm finding you since you are in Charlotte, yeah. But we appreciate you for coming on.
Thank you, Gordon.
Thanks for having me, guys. This was fun.
All right. That was Gordon Hayward. That was a lot of fun basketball talk. And that was this episode. So thank you for listening to and or watching this episode.
Wait. Hold on. Time out. Hold on. One, great job with the Gordon Hayward interview. Two, I have one question for you, right? So we sat on this podcast and you asked me, did I want to see any new Unrivaled awards? And I was like, man. And you were like, I would like that. Why did you then immediately get mad at the one new Unrivaled award they made? Comeback player of the year, Marina Mabry. And you're just like, well, hold on. What do you mean? You asked for this. Respect Marina.
I do respect Marina. I did ask for this. The wait, hold on, was twofold for me. One, it was like, wait, we actually have another award. And like tied to that was like, so was there not going to be any, was there not a media vote for this? Was this selected by the league itself?
Oh, you couldn't vote for it.
I was like, wait a minute, where did this come from? And then the second part was like, huh, Marina for Comeback Player of the Year. My immediate thought was like, wait a minute. So like her versus like Aaliyah Boston. I was like, well, she certainly bounced back from what the first year was. And I was like, all right, Marina did play like 3 or 4 games last year before she was shut down. So like, Aaliyah Boston didn't have the same role. And so that was more of like a most improved thing if they were going to have that versus like comeback player of the year. So I was like, okay, that's honestly fine for Marina. But like, to your point, it was more so like, wait, I did not know this existed. How was this selected? More than like, I can't believe Marina was picked. I think that's a fine selection for what Marina did. And again, making history in Philadelphia, that she was on the fringes of the All Unrivaled second team as well, the scoring and the playmaking. So like that part was fine. It was a literal like, wait a minute, I didn't know this was a thing. I want to know more. Is this going to happen next year? Like,
You
can I ask you a counter question before I do the outro?
Sure can't. You forgot we in the outro. We got to get out of here. What you got?
Are you ready for Nafisa Collier comeback player of the year next year?
Are you ready?
Absolutely. Precedence has been set. Now, thank you for listening to and or watching this episode of the Dunker Spot. Please subscribe if you haven't already. We're on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast, you can find us. Subscribe to the Yahoo NBA YouTube channel if you haven't already. That's where you'll find this fine pod. That is also where you will find the latest Dunk Tape episode. We broke down Con Knipple and his value as a screener, the many ways that the Hornets use him and how he amplifies things. So check that out if you haven't already. You can follow me on socials at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on socials at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all next week.